Well, how's everybody doing this morning? Good, good, good. I hope you guys had a good fourth. I didn't see too many kids or people in the first server that had burn marks. So, you know, if you're going to judge it by my family standard of a successful fourth, then it was a success. Good job. But my name's Jonathan, and I work with students here. I'm a pastor here on staff at Crossroads, and we're excited you're here with us this morning. But today we're going to be digging into James chapter 3. You can turn there if you want. We're going to be in verse 1. We're going to start in verse 1. But before we kind of dig in, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am originally not from Texas. Me and my wife and our newborn saw the light back in October and decided to come on over to where, you know, the sunshine is and the heat. So we came over, but I'm originally from Nashville, Tennessee. And my family moved there, me, my parents, my older brother, my younger brother, when I was about in third grade. And so my mom got a job while we were there, and she is a teacher. And she started teaching at this school, this private school. And so my parents decided to send me and my brothers to this private school as well. And this is the type of school where almost every day, at least every week, we would sing our alma mater song. And whether it was in chapel because it was a Christian school, or whether it was at pep rallies, or whether it was at some kind of games or gatherings we had, they always sang our alma mater song, so that throughout my course of my time there until I graduated high school, I heard this song over and over and over again, the words of the song over and over again. And so me, as I graduated high school, said, I just can't get enough of this song, so I'm going to go to the university that's connected to this school that I went to. So I spent 4 more years in school hearing this same song in chapel and other places throughout my 4 years there. So most of my life, I heard this song. Well, I graduated college, and I had not heard this song for a long, long time. I mean, it wasn't something I kept readily on hand to listen to or anything. So I had graduated college, and it's been years since I've heard or talked or even thought about that song. But this past May, my younger brother graduated from the same university I went to. And so me and Danny and Levi went back up to Nashville and spent the weekend there. And I'm sitting in the auditorium as my brother's graduating. It's towards the end of the graduation, and this song just comes on, and automatically, without thinking, I just start singing, David Lipscomb, hail to thee. You guys don't know it? Come on. But it's the song, the words of the song, they hit me, and I just started singing them without even thinking. And then also what happened is, in that moment, all these thoughts and all these feelings and all these emotions start running back and rushing back to me because the power of those words. I hadn't thought about those words in years, and yet I sit here and I hear them, and not only do I can sing them, which is poorly, but I can remember the instances and the memories and the thoughts and the past that comes with those words. I remember singing them in middle school and in high school and joking around in college about them, right? I mean, I remember that in that moment. And it's not just the words that impacted me, but it's everything that came with it as well. Have you had a moment like this? Probably not a moment with my alma mater song, but you've had a moment when you sing or heard words, or somebody has said something to you, or somebody has casually, offhandedly said something, and you heard it, and in that moment, it's not just words, but it triggers all this other stuff that comes with it. It's that moment when somebody says a phrase, or somebody says something, and it's not just the phrase, you hear the phrase, but then all this stuff comes along with it, and it's not just words anymore, but it's the power of those words that impact your life to make you think about the past, whether good or bad. But in that moment, all this stuff comes rushing back to you in that moment. In single instance of a comment, an offhanded comment, or a conversation that takes you back to that. And the funny thing is, in our society, we try and act like this isn't true, that words are powerful, that words have impact on our lives. I mean, so when I was growing up, I had a friend who had the shirt, which you might have heard this phrase before. It says, I am rubber, you are glue. So you got that down. Whatever you say to me bounces off and sticks to you. Have you ever heard this phrase before? It's the idea that this person was wearing this shirt and they were proud to say that whatever you said to me really didn't impact me. It just bounced it off and really was talking about yourself. It's trying to deflect to say that your words don't really mean much to me. I can live my life without your words. They don't impact me. But this isn't true. The phrase sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt. You know, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me is a ridiculous phrase. That's not reality at all. The words that we say to each other and the words that you say to other people impact people, because you remember those conversations and you remember those moments when somebody said something to you and it's changed your life for the better or for the worse. This has happened throughout history. This isn't just some new thing. You can walk back through history and see, you can even start just with this week, maybe think of Martin Luther King Jr. and his words as he marched on Washington in 1963, his I Have a Dream speech. We remember those words because it changed history moving forward. Or you can go back further and you can go back to Hitler back in 1941 when he declared war on the United States and Soviet Union. The words and those words, the impact of those words changed the course of history. Or you can go back further to Abraham Lincoln in 1863 when he gives the Gettysburg Address. And the Gettysburg Address is roughly 272 words. It's 2 minutes long, and yet they've been remembered throughout at least 150 years so far. I've said over 272 words, and you're not going to remember all of them, but I'm not hurt. But the power of words changes our lives. It changes the way we view other people. It changes the way we see other people. It changes the way, the direction that we go in our lives. Because here's the thing, you can't pick and choose which words you want to hold on to. So if somebody says something to you, it's not like you're like, okay, everybody stop. I got to really remember this moment and these words that people say to me. I mean, that happens sometimes and it works, but most of the time it's these casual conversations that you have with people or the conversations that you have when they're not even thinking about it, but yet they say something that you'll never forget. I remember the craziest things, but it's interesting throughout the course of history, the highest highs and the lowest lows have been based around people using words powerfully. And it's changed the course of our society and our world, and it changes the course of our lives too. And I remember specifically the moment I told my grandfather I wanted to be a pastor and go into ministry, and he looked at me and he said, "That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard." I'm never going to forget that moment, whether I want to or not, and whether he thinks about that conversation at all, probably not. But I'll never forget that the words that we say are impactful. They mean something. And they're not just empty words that we say, but that they change the course of people's lives and they stick with us and they stick with other people. And you don't get to pick what you say sticks with somebody else. Which is an interesting idea, right? Whatever you say, you don't get to tell that person, okay, I want you to remember this or not remember this. It's just how our words are used, and it's how they hit people and how they impact other people. And this has always been the case, like I said, throughout history. And you can even go back further past James, behind James. You can go back to the Old Testament and see in Proverbs, it says, "And the tongue can bring life or death or life. Those who love to talk will reap the consequences." So the Proverbs talks about this, the wisdom, and then you can even go closer to Jesus' time around 200 BC. This book was written called Sherlock, and it said that many have fallen by the edge of the sword, but not as many that have fallen because of the tongue, which is an interesting concept. How many people have died because of the sword and war, but yet not many people have fallen because of the tongue. The power of words impacts our lives, and it has weight to how we do things, whether we realize it or want to or not. And so as we come to James this morning, we come to this passage of scripture that talks about the power of the tongue. It talks about words, and it talks about the impact it has on ourselves and others and our relationship with God. But James, what he's doing here is he's not just, you got to think, James, if he's going to talk about the power of words, James better use words very carefully, right? So if you're going to take the time to talk about the tongue, which is where our words come from and the power that has, you better make sure you use words very carefully and specifically because you're talking about the thing that you're describing. And so what we're going to do is we're going to read through actually these passages of scripture. I'm going to read through all 12 of them as we go through. And I want you guys to listen to the words. Because if James is talking about words, he uses words specifically and he uses metaphors specifically. But I want you to listen to these words and let them wash over you. And then we'll walk back through and look at them verse by verse a little bit. But so verse 1 of James 3, it says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boast. Consider what a great force is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can salt spring produce fresh water." First thing that sticked out to me, which is interesting, is so I'm given this passage to speak for the first time to you guys. And the first verse says, hey, not many of you should be up there speaking, which is great. Thanks for that. Well, mind game Steve is playing with me, but I appreciate that. No, but really, this verse, what sticks out to me is if you notice, there's 12 verses here, and 8 out of these 12 verses are chock full of metaphors. Just metaphor after metaphor James is using. It's like he's sitting around thinking, how can I describe the tongue, and how can I describe the power it has on our lives and other people's lives and our relationship with God? He says, it's like the bit in a horse's mouth. It's like the rudder on a ship. It's like a spark in a forest. It's like fire. It keeps going on. It's like a fresh water coming out of a salt water. You can't do that. I mean, he just keeps using these metaphors over and over and over again. It's like he's taking them on his hand and throwing them against the wall, and hopefully one of them sticks with you. And you understand that the words that we say have power, and they have weight, and they have significance on our lives and on other people's lives as well. So James, as he's doing this, he uses all these metaphors, and it's interesting, and the tension I see in this passage, and as I was reflecting back on this, is as a society and as people, we know that words have impact. I mean, like, whether you realize it consciously or subconsciously, you know that words are impactful, and the words that you say to other people are impactful. Because like I was saying earlier, we could go around this room, and each of you could tell stories of words that people have said or spoken over you or made about you that have impacted your life, for the better, for the worst. And you can't change that, and you don't get to pick which ones do. But it's interesting that we kind of know this. We don't have to have, it's funny, we don't even have to have the scriptures to tell us this. We know this. You're living representations of this being true, that words are that powerful, words are that impactful. But the tension I face and what I see is in our society and in our world, we don't view them as that having that much weight. And I try to understand why, and what I think it is as a people, we are more focused in on what we say as opposed to how we use our words. Which what I mean by that is, as people, and especially as Christians, we do this so easy, is we are more focused in on making sure we say certain words and not other words, as opposed to how we use all of our words and all the conversations that we have throughout our lives. And we do this all the time. I mean, it's the idea that it's not just what we say that's important, but it's how we're saying anything. It's like we've swung the pendulum so far to one side that we've neglected how we use our words, because you cannot say something that's considered bad, but yet you say it in a way that the intention of your heart is not right. No offense for anybody from Mississippi, but I was in Mississippi for 4 years before here, and they always used to say, bless your heart. And it's not a nice thing to say. That's not like, oh man, I really feel all nice that they said that to me. It's the idea, you don't say anything bad because none of those words are bad, but you say it in a way that really is saying, you're really not that smart, or I really don't agree with you, but bless your heart, you know. You're not as great as I am, or you're not as enlightened as I am. It's the idea that it's not just what we say that's important, but it's how we say the words that we say in all of our conversations of life. And this affects us in the church, this affects us outside the church. I mean, I can tell you, if I was to tell my wife I love her, and I just say it because I know that's what she wants to hear, she could care less. She wants to hear me say I love you from my heart. She wants to hear me actually mean it from the intention of why I'm saying it, not just because I know that's what she wants to hear, but because I actually am feeling it in that moment, and I have the feelings and the thoughts and all that stuff that comes along with it. It's the same thing we do with our kids. It's the idea that with our kids, I grew up and I had two brothers, so we fought all the time. And our parents would look at us and say you're sorry after we get in an argument or hit each other or something. And we would always look at each other with that look like, if she was not here right now, we would still be going at it. But I'm going to sit here for her and say I'm sorry, but I don't really mean it. And so after we'd say it, my parents would look at us and they'd say, okay, say it like you mean it. Because they want us to actually mean what we're saying. They don't just want the empty words, but they want us to actually have the heart that comes behind our words we use. And Jesus does this beautifully. I love that Jesus does this. Jesus comes, and when he comes and we read in the Gospels, he says, you've heard that it was said. And then what he always does is he compare and contrast things. Like, you know you're not supposed to commit adultery. That's the what. But I want to talk about how we even get there, which is lust. Or he says, you know you're not supposed to commit murder. But I want to talk about the intention of what we do with our anger. Jesus doesn't just say at the surface of how, or I mean the what of the question, but he wants to get to the how we even lead up to that. And so in our words, he does the same thing. He wants us to understand that it's not just what we say, James does, that matters, but it's how we use our words in our conversations with others. So here's the point. If we don't understand our words, our heart, and our intention behind how we speak to other people, we won't ever grasp the power and the ability of our words. It's that simple, but yet that hard. That we don't understand our heart and our intention with how we use words, we won't ever grasp the power and the ability of words. Because like I said, we know this, but yet it doesn't really change much. We act like words are just words, and they're not that, you know, that carry as much weight as they do. But unless we understand the how, I don't think we'll get anywhere from there. So what we're going to do is I'm going to look back through some of these verses and let's talk about them. Because I think what James is getting at here is he's trying to get to the heart of the issue. He doesn't want us to focus on the what we say, but how we're using our words in our conversations with others. So verse 1 says, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. So James starts off and he kind of says, okay, teachers, here's what you need to understand. And some of you probably are saying, okay, well, this doesn't apply to me. I'm not a teacher. I don't teach in school, nor am I a teacher that teaches the gospel. But what James is doing, that in this time and in this culture, 90% of the people in this world could not read. So 10% of the people could read. So the main form of getting things across, the main form of communication was how you use your words. They called it it's rhetoric, the art of persuasive speech. It's the idea that how you use your words is important. So James is saying, I'm going to start with teachers, but what I'm really doing is I wanted it to trickle down for everybody to understand that the power of words that we use is important. We can be judged and condemned by it. He's not just singling out teachers here, but he's singling out teachers in hopes that it goes down to everybody, because in one way or another, we all are talking about the gospel, whether we realize it or not. And so it impacts not just teachers, but impacts us too. And so in that culture, this was significant because this is how they were, and only 10% could read. And so, but James is saying it affects everybody, not just these people. It goes down from there to everybody else underneath. And so what's interesting is in this time, James is, in this culture, there's a Greek kind of moral teaching going around that kind of swung the pendulum so far one way that said, words are so powerful, let's just not speak at all. And James is saying, he's pretty pessimistic, you'll realize, if you walk through it and you read it, he doesn't really have a great tone about the tongue. But what he's getting at is saying, I don't want you to stop talking, I don't want you to go that far, but I want you to understand the weight that your words have on others, especially teachers, but everybody. The power of your words and the weight that you carry whenever you use them. So he goes on from here. He uses a couple metaphors in verses 3-5. It says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boast. Consider what a great force is set on fire by a small spark. Go back to the first slide, the tongue part. So, the first cruise ship that I ever went on, the only cruise ship I've ever been on, was a senior in high school. We went on this cruise for 7 days. And I vividly remember, if you've ever been on a cruise ship, you walk up to this boat and it's massive. And you're thinking thousands of people are going to be on this for a week or however long you're on there. And I remember walking onto board and looking down to my right and seeing the rudder and propeller of this ship and thinking, there is literally some guy up in a booth steering a steering wheel that's going to direct this thing for the next 7 days. And that thing is so small compared to how big this ship is. James is trying to get us to understand that the tongue, although a small part of your body in comparison to the rest of it, has such weight and can direct your life in such a massive and monumental way that you have to understand that the power it brings. It makes great boast. It can do great things. And so James is trying to get the people to understand this. And what's interesting too is that all these metaphors that James uses are all very common expressions and metaphors in that time. All of these metaphors that James uses in this verse and in particular this whole passage, all of them the people knew by heart and they had heard these things before, but James kind of takes them and he directs them to talk about the power of the tongue for them to emphasize again the power and the weight that our words have towards each other. He goes on from there in the next verse. It says, the tongue is also a fire, a world of evil. Go one more. The world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body. It sets the whole course of one's life on fire and is itself set on fire by hell. So James I read this for the first time. I was like, James gets a little intense here, right? He starts off by saying, okay, the tongue, it's like a fire. Okay, I can understand that. It spits fire sometimes. It's a world of evil among the parts of the body. So he escalates it a little bit. Then he takes it up another notch and says, it corrupts the whole body. It sets the whole course of one's life on fire. So now we're on fire. And then he says, it's set on fire by hell. So he just kind of keeps saying the monumentum, keeps going up and up and up and saying this is how powerful the tongue is. But what's interesting is this word hell is usually probably not the same thing that we think of when we think of hell when James uses it. This word hell is the Greek word Gehenna, which is talking about a place called the Valley of Hinnom. It's referencing. And this Valley of Hinnom is an actual place that the people out of Jerusalem or the people in that time could walk to. It was outside the city of Jerusalem on the southern part of the wall. And so when James says it's set on fire by this Valley of Hinnom, it's an actual place that they could see, not usually what we think of. But it's a place they could walk to and go outside and look at. And James is saying that, hey, you remember this Valley of Hinnom? And the people would say yes. Because what happens here in the history of the Israelites in the Old Testament is that this valley is a place of judgment and condemnation, because the people of Israel, when they fell away from God back in the Old Testament, one of the gods they started worshiping was this god called Molech. And Molech is a Canaanite god who the Israelites started worshiping, and this god demanded child sacrifices. And so in the Israelites, in their rebellion and their turning from God, started following this god Molech, and in turn they started sacrificing their children to this god in this Valley of Hinnom. And so the people, the Israelites, were condemned and judged because of what they did there in that place. And so James is saying it's like that place. Because in James's time, by now, this was kind of considered, it was obviously a place of judgment and condemnation. So they sent their trash there. There was fires always going to burn waste and stuff. So when James uses this illustration, the people can literally see this place in their mind. And James is saying, that's how powerful your tongue is. It doesn't just affect other people, but it can bring your own judgment and condemnation upon yourself. And what happens on from here is James is trying to get them to understand again and again, more metaphors, the power of the tongue. So it's like the idea of your tongue is our own worst enemy sometimes. I mean, I've caught myself in many situations where I realize that what I'm saying is being taken across very poorly, or it's not coming across the way I want, and it's really reflecting poorly on myself. And you've had those moments, I'm sure. But it made me think of this one story. So Danny and me and Levi went to go see Danny's family one time over the holidays in Florida. And we were in Orlando with her sister, and we were staying at her house, and her sister has four kids. And the oldest one, which was, I think, 5 or 6 at the time, was there. And we were making cookies one night. We were there. And so we're making cookies. You get all the good stuff, you know, the sprinkles and the icing and all that stuff that goes on that. So throughout the night, we had done this. And so we ended up before the kids went to bed. And so we went to bed, and we left some of the sprinkles and some of the things out that night. And we wake up the next morning, and we realize that all the blue sprinkles are gone. And so we're like, okay, what happened? We're like, okay, we know we didn't like set them out. Maybe the dog got into them. We weren't 100% sure. Next thing we know, Haley Reese, who's the oldest, 5 or 6, comes out, and she's got blue like dye all around her mouth and on her tongue, and sprinkles plastered on her face where she fell asleep eating sprinkles. And we look at her and we say, do you know what happened to the sprinkles? To which she responds, no. To which we say, are you sure? And she keeps going, no. I mean, I remember her looking at me and saying, I think they disappeared. And I say, I don't think that's good theory, but I don't think that's true. It's the story of remembering that her own tongue literally brought about her own judgment and condemnation. It's a silly story, but to illustrate the point that she was in trouble because of her tongue, literally, but James is saying that our tongue has that capacity to do that to ourselves. And you know this, and you've experienced this. So James goes on from there, and he kind of uses this little wit, this little jab at the people that I love. It says, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. So James here is saying, hey, you guys remember back in Genesis 1 when you're told to rule over the animals? And the people and us today are saying, yeah, we probably remember that. And James saying, hey, you've done that, and you are doing that, but yet you can't even tame the old thing that's in your mouth. And the people are like, oh, that's a gut check. I can imagine James dropping the mic and walking off here, because he kind of just throws it in there, these verses, and then just kind of keeps going on. So we're going to go on. It says, with the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Let me read that again. With our tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. So James, I like this, and these passages in particular, these verses, because James stops using metaphors and then gets pretty honest here. Probably something's going on at that time, and just as much as it impacts them then, thousands of years ago, it impacts us here today, because more often than not in our society and in our lives, we carry about this dualistic thinking when it comes to our life. That we can separate what we do in one place and what we do in another place and think they can't overlap or they don't have any merit on each other, and so there's no reason to think about it or worry about what happens here, because it's not going to affect this part of my life. And in no two bigger ways that we do this that James points out that I believe is in our spiritual lives and then our normal lives. It's the idea that we can separate what we do in here or what we do around church people from what we do around other people. And he's saying, James is saying, you can't do the two. This shouldn't be. You can't praise God and curse other people. He's not obviously saying cuss words, but he's saying the way that you're handling your conversations with these people is drastically different from the praise that you're bringing God whenever we're together. And you can't hold those two separate. One of the students that I first met when I first got into ministry, I went to go eat lunch with at school one day. And I'm eating lunch there and I bring him lunch and it's me and him and his friends and we're sitting around the table and we're talking and we're having conversation. I'm having conversation with his friends. And so obviously, but this guy the whole time has not said a word, this mutual friend that I have towards him, this student. I'm asking him words. I'm trying to have conversation with him. I'm trying to, you know, ask him questions and things, but he's responding with like a shake or a nod. He doesn't really say much. And his friends are doing the same thing. And he's kind of acting the same way. He's not responding. He's kind of being short. He's not really saying anything. And so eventually towards the end of the awkward meal, his friends leave and I'm sitting there with him and I say, okay, what's the matter? And he looks at me and says, it's just weird. To which I reply, what is weird? And he says, well, you're here. And I say, yes, I am. And he says, then my school friends are here. And I said, yeah, it's good, you know, Captain Obvious. But he says, what he goes on to explain is he says, hey, for my whole life, I've separated myself when it comes to my school life as opposed to my church life. And he's a teenager and he's figuring out, but he's realizing in this moment that the way that he's acting around one group of people was drastically different than the way he's acting around another group of people. And it's not just what he's saying, but it's how he's carrying himself and how he's talking in those situations that's different. He's realizing that he's separated his life, and this is the first moment when both of those have come together, and he doesn't know how to talk. Literally, he doesn't know how to talk. He's dumbfounded because he's conflicted between who he is because he's pulled his life apart and tried to separate these two realities, and when they came together, he didn't know how to handle it. James is saying that you cannot separate what we do in here from what you do outside of here. And it's interesting because this is exactly what Jesus does when he comes to earth. Is he pulls these two realities together. He's human and he's divine in one. He's bringing the kingdom, which is an earthly concept, of heaven and making it one. He's talking about, this is just what he does. Jesus is trying to get us to understand that you cannot separate life into what you do towards God and what you do towards others and not think they have any connection. Jesus pulls these worlds together and says, I'm not trying to separate your world and I'm not just worried about what you do with God, but I'm worried about how that affects other people's lives as well and how you live that out. Jesus is not trying to separate the common and the sacred. He's trying to give us new eyes to see the sacred and the common. It's the idea that both of these are connected and you can't do one without the other. And the funny thing is we try to do this all the time. And what happens is Jesus quotes, he says, the mouth speaks what the heart is full of, right? He says, out of how you speak is how you're, out of your heart is how you're going to speak. And it's not just what you say, but it's how you say things. And it's not just in front of God, but in front of others as well. And this happens again, if you know, over and over again in the Old Testament. Because what happens in the Old Testament is the prophets come to the people and the people are worshiping God and doing what they need to do. But then outside of that, they're falling away from God. And the prophets, especially Jeremiah, says, listen, you can't do this. You can't pull this away or pull this apart and think that what you do with God in this time is going to be any different than how you should do with other people outside of that time. I mean, James is trying to get us to see that he says, people have been made in God's likeness. It's the Imago Dei that we talked about a couple weeks ago with Charlie. It's the idea that whether you want them to be or not, other people are made in the image of God, and you can't pick and choose who that is. And so as you bring your praise to God, it affects how you view and talk to others because you don't view them how you give them value, but you view them because of the grace and the mercy and the image that God has implanted in them. And so that changes the way we talk about things. That changes the way we think about things. That changes the way that we have conversations with each other because it's not just what we do in here and then what we have conversations about over lunch that matter. It's how we handle ourselves in all these situations. It's not what words we use, but it's how we use our words all the time. And Jesus talks about this, and James is trying to get us to understand. And it's powerful and it's simple, but yet it's that challenging at the same time. So let me end with this. studying for this sermon or thinking about the sermon and reading different stuff, I came across this one study, this cultural study that talked about words and how different societies use different words to mean different things from the value they place on them. So I'll give you an example. So compare and contrast our culture, the American culture, towards the Indonesian culture. And if you were to ask the Indonesian or the American culture what rice is, we would say it's rice. And they would say, okay, what about it in the field? And we'd say it's rice in the field. What about it on a truck? It's rice on a truck. What about it at bags in a store? Well, it's rice. And then they'd say, what about when you eat it? It's still rice. We have one word for it. It's rice. But when you go to a different culture in a different place, if you went to the Indonesian culture, they would see and they had different words for the one word that we have is rice. Because as it's in the field, it's called padai. As it's in bags, it's called beras. And as it's on plates, it's called nasi, which I butcher those words, I'm sure. But they're different words to mean different things. And the study was simply saying that as a society, what you see value in, you give words to. Because if you were to flip that around, it's the same thing with us. We have pigs, but we don't call them just pigs. We have pork and loins and tenderloin and, I mean, all these different bacon and sausage. I mean, right? We have multiple words to describe something that we value as people. And so the study was saying, as your values change as a people, as a nation, as individuals, so does your words with how you talk about that thing. So the challenge is, as we see other people and as we talk to other people, we have to understand that they have value because it's not the value that we give them. It's the value that God has placed in them. And so we respond to that, we respond with the same words we use to God, we use to others because in a way God's there. The image of God is in these people, all people. And so this week I was thinking about this, and then obviously things happened this week that were tragic. And I was thinking to myself, if you want to apply this message to your life right now, which is, you know, always kind of hard to do to think about, is the words that we use talking about what happened this week matter. And it doesn't matter where you fall on the scale, whether you agree with this or disagree with that or have your own opinions about certain things, since we all have opinions. But it's more important how you talk about those things more than anything else. And for you to understand that your words and how you use your words and how you have these conversations talking about what's happened has weight. And you might not think it or you might not place much value on it, but it does. So how we talk about other people matters because we see God in them and we respond to that. And like I said, it's that simple, but yet it's that challenging. Words we use all the time, but yet we don't understand the power of words because we are more focused on what we say instead of how we say it. And when we see other people in the image of God, we respond in a way that shows them value because God has placed value in them. And it's hard and it's a gut level check. And it's just one of those things that it just sticks with you some, and especially throughout the course of this week and the conversations to come. So think about that and know that the conversations you have over lunch impact how you think, do things in here. And you can't separate those two. Let's sing.